Dieter and Hutch, Tuesday. Nothing else is going on. We're talking 49ers trade deadline, baby. Jake, you just had some breaking news from the San Francisco 49ers. Folks. What's going on?
Well, you can punch your ticket, buy your flights to New Orleans because Tashaun Gibson is back.
That would be safety Tashaun Gibson back on the practice squad,
On the practice squad.
Do you know what cruise line he was on when they signed him?
Well, he was, I believe, signed with the Jags and then was suspended to start the year, I believe, for PEDs. I should probably 100% verify that, but I know
he was. So the Jags cut him, and the Niners are like, hey, now, come on down. You can go live at the Hilton. So Tashaun Gibson in, honestly, you know, we'll get into the actual news, which is marginally more important, like legitimately,
right.
Like a total dud of a trade deadline day across the NFL. Not that they should be making trades strictly for the content, but think of the content, folks. Come on. Let's up our game a little bit on these trades. The 49ers, this is not a typo. You will have to double check it. This is going to be a complete pain in the ass for so many of us moving forward in the media space. They traded for Khalil Davis. And Jake, here's the most telling part. They gave up a 2026 seventh round pick. Just cut him.
It's going to haunt him. It's going to haunt him.
just cut Khalil Davis then. What are you doing? You don't need a 2026 seventh round pick. I don't know, man. How much? You got $5? Like, you can give us that. Khalil Davis, who, shout out to our friend and my colleague, Cam Inman. His name is so similar to Kalia Davis that Cam Inman, when he first got the news from whomever, thought that Kalia Davis had been traded to the Texans. It turns out, no, there's a player named Khalil Davis who plays the exact same position, rather similarly, and he got traded to the San Francisco 49ers. So the Niners now have a Khalil Davis and a Kalia Davis. And Jake, early scout by me, I'm not sure I wouldn't rather have Kalia Davis. It's a body. It's a body. That's about all I can say.
We both turned on the tape, which...
get that NFL Pro using that sub.
After grinding Jeremiah Ledbetter tape for a week and claiming the Niners should have traded for him, I stand by that.
You should.
Khalil Davis is a guy where you go, who's that? And then you turn it on and you go, I still don't quite understand what his thing is, and his thing isn't really one thing. He sometimes flashes burst and then sometimes looks like he has no burst. I will say he's pretty strong, but his pad level is pretty bad. He gets very vertical, but because he's so strong, it evens out. He feels like a guy who the Niners love athleticism. They love giving Chris Kocurek athletes. Maybe he can unlock him, right? That's usually their whole thing. He's been in the league since 2020. So, you know, he's just playing for D'Amico Ryan. So I don't know how much there is to unlock.
Yeah, that's the weird part. Oh, they can unlock him. He's literally coming from the exact same system. And it's not as
if the Texans aren't great on the defensive tackle. They're not like in a good spot there.
And they didn't add one either. They didn't go like, we'll take your Kalia Davis for your Khalil Davis, which would have been the funniest trade in recent NFL history. But no, they're like, you know how we have really, really crappy defensive tackles, 49ers? Why don't you just take one of them? Just give us whatever you got laying around.
You know,
that's telling. That's weird.
You know what it felt like? Well, it didn't even feel like that. It was like the Niners were looking for something better, could not find it. And they're like, we need to get someone.
Yes.
We need to get a body.
Yep.
And so they went, this guy has athleticism. He was a 98th percentile athlete. He tested great in broad jump, which is a thing the Niners have always loved from their defensive tackles.
Yep.
So they went with him, but it's like, you got a defensive tackle group that's Malik Collins, who's been good and is being asked a lot of. You've got Jordan Elliott, who you watch and you go, oh, that was good. And then, oh, God, that's the worst play I've ever seen.
The old hinge, Jordan Elliott. Just open the door, baby.
Yeah, it's like Javon Kinlaw all over again, because you watch him and they're like, he's so big, but he doesn't really do a lot right. And then you've got Kalia Davis, who's not been impressive. I just watched all of that tape.
Yeah.
Kevin Givens, who's been better than I expected, even in the run game, but he stays low. but he's got a groin issue. And then so there's Evan Anderson, who, you know, he's stout, but has really no athleticism whatsoever. So anything that's not right at him, he's not really helpful for. And so then you bring in Khalil Davis, and it's like, okay,
what does he do? Honestly, Jake, this is very egotistical. I know this is not what's happening, but this feels like something the 49ers are doing to directly satiate us. Like, Dieter and Hutch are going to go on Tuesday, right, and they need something to talk about. They've been bitching about defensive tackle. And if we want to go even deeper into the media weeds, we'll get a defensive tackle. No one else is actually going to like watch the tape on this guy.
Right.
They'll just look at the stats and they'll be like, can Chris Kucerik unlock him? Not realizing that there's nothing new happening here. It's the same fucking scheme. They're not going to play him at a different position. It's right. The same shit. So whatever he did in Houston, he'll do here, because Houston, by the way, has the same problems the Niners do. Not enough depth on their defensive line, but one really good defensive lineman in Will Anderson. Well, now you have Nick Bosa. It's the same shit in a different package. Luckily, the Niners jerseys look better. Jesus Christ, some of those tapes with that new Houston jersey.
Oh, my God,
jersey,
with the Texans jersey, you can't even tell what number somebody is. And
just buy the Oilers name back. Just buy it back.
It feels like in Madden when you just get these like default jerseys and you're 12 years old and you're like, these are sick
until you're a 36-year-old man and you're having to use your monocular to figure out who's who on the line. Now, not only is it bad enough that we have Khalil Davis and Kalia Davis now, I can't even figure out what fucking number this guy is on certain jerseys. So maybe that changes with the Niners thing. Let's quickly touch base here on Kevin Molina's note. A little different. Because Houston wasn't running the same scheme back then, and Amenahu wasn't getting many reps. I get it. It's not to say that Khalil Davis can't turn into something here, but there's just no logical reason to think that he'll be anything different for the 49ers than he was for the Texans. They're two teams in incredibly similar situations that run the exact same scheme. And Houston didn't want him, so why would the 49ers want him other than he's a body?
Yeah, I mentioned it in my piece. Because I went pretty deep on that Amenahu trade when it happened.
That's right.
And Amenahu at the time actually had like pretty wild pressure numbers. Like, he was getting limited reps. The Texans were kind of a mess. I feel like, I forget who was coaching at the time, but they were messy.
Was it still Lovie Smith? It was still Lovie Smith.
It might have been Lovie Smith, but they weren't a good team.
No.
And they gave up, you know, that sixth to get Amenahu, but it was for 2 years. It was for 2 years of him on a rookie deal, and they had some good pressure numbers. He could play inside and out. This is a future seventh for a guy that no one has really had a lot of interest in. I think could he be better than Kalia Davis? Probably, because Kalia Davis is getting moved around a lot, and injuries to his knees are rough, and taking a seventh round next year swing when you've got 11 picks this year, sure, whatever.
Yeah, no, I don't care about the pick. I'm
there's
not
athletic upside, but the tape is not kind. And if you prefer, you know, PFF's numbers over our own, I can give you those. I don't think PFF is good at delineating scheme or assignment
at all.
But PFF, they give him a 53.5 grade. That's 91 out of 134 defensive tackles. A 51.6 run defense grade. That's 78 out of 134. And a 56.6 pass rush grade, which is 100 out of 134. So, like, the eye test supports what, you know, those numbers say. And that's that he's a body with athleticism. And sometimes you see some flashes, but there's no real level of consistency or technique.
No, I'll say this, much like Malik Collins, who honestly, some of the same rap, right? Like, clearly a rotational NFL defensive lineman. Yeah, you're getting a lot of Lincecum hollers lately.
I've gotten that before. I got that in Kylo Ren when I grew my hair out the last time. So it's not the worst. It could be worse.
You could absolutely take it. Legitimately, like, when you saw Malik Collins when he was traded to the 49ers, again, Houston doesn't have enough defensive tackles. They're, like, desperate for a defensive tackle. And in the last couple of months, they're like, hey, Niners, do you want two of our defensive tackles?
Right.
We're not happy with them. Do you want them? And that doesn't feel like the correct order of process for a team that one thinks that they're going to the Super Bowl in the 4-4 49ers, and the other one, which is a team on the up, that really shouldn't be like just jettisoning talent, because why would they? Like, what's the upside of that? Who are they putting in? So I do find the fact that they've now made two trades with the Texans for defensive tackles strange.
It is odd.
It's
really odd.
Unimaginative. And again, they could have just come to us and we would have said, like, hey, you should take a fifth round pick and go get Jeremiah Ledbetter. Like, that would have worked out really well. Now, again, that is operating in our weird vacuum here where we're presuming Jeremiah Ledbetter's available. But
right.
Why wouldn't he be? He's a 30-year-old player in the final right. year of his deal.
On a terrible team.
You're about to get a fifth round pick. Like, let's roll.
And it feels like fundamentally, it's like they don't believe in the big boy, you know? Like to me,
they didn't even draft Evan Anderson.
I believe in a big squatty man, you know?
Yeah. It's not just that they don't believe in a big boy. They do believe in a big boy so long as that big boy somehow has the ability to burst through the line. They want gap splitters to a fault. The fault has clearly been shown, and yet they're still doubling down on gap splitters. That's what Khalil Davis does. He splits gaps because he's crazy athletic. Put him at Sam linebacker, he'd be fun as fuck.
I mean, he literally was the Sam linebacker in college at UCF.
I mean, he's really fast. When he's out in the open space, it's a sight to behold. The problem is he's usually chasing a running back that's gone around the outside of the tackle box and is running towards the end zone. He might be able to chase him down. That's an impressive thing to see for a 300-pounder. What I'd like to see is someone holding the fucking A-gap or the B-gap so that other guys on the defensive line who need a little bit of help get a half beat to maybe beat their guy, shed a block, and get into the middle. They don't have anything like that. They haven't had anything like that since DeForest Buckner or the few games of Arik Armstead where he looked like DeForest Buckner, like all six of them in his career. They just don't have that. And so they're doubling down on this wide nine scheme again, which has been disastrous so far this year because they don't have the personnel to effectively run it. And they're doubling down on gap splitting, which is inherent to the wide nine. And it's just, you're just asking to give up 5 yards a carry and nothing changes by adding another body, just another Kalia Davis.
Right. It's like their calculus is it's sort of like the fundamental calculation of, okay, we run this and it's great for our pass rush and it lets our guys get loose. And sometimes we can run some fun stunts off of this that take forever to develop. But like when it's going, like the pass rush looks great. You can play simple in coverage, but when it's not great and it asks a lot of your DBs, and their corners luckily have been pretty good.
Yeah.
But it also means you need a second linebacker who has to really be able to take on a lineman, because what happens is like they get double teams inside and they don't have guys that can even hold up for a second. And then one of those interior offensive linemen releases to the second level, seals off your linebackers. And then you've got a lot of like, you know, 12, 8 yard gains up the middle. And even if it's just like a 4 yard gain, it's kind of rough.
If we just call it a front six, presuming you're in a nickel formation, you can have two of the three. You need two of the three. You need either good tackles, good linebackers, or good defensive ends. You need to have two of the three. If you're going to sacrifice a defensive tackle, you need to have great ends and great linebackers. And if you're going to sacrifice an end, say like the Kansas City Chiefs, you need to have great tackles and great linebackers. If you don't want to have good linebackers, you better have a bitch in line across the front. The 49ers cannot say in good conscience that they have a plus at anything. They have two very good players, elite level players at end and at linebacker, but their gains are negated in a lot of ways by the guys who play opposite them at that position. Nick Bosa can get double teamed every play. There's no reason that a team doesn't do that. We're leaving Leonard Floyd one-on-one. Great. That's a win. Oh no, we might not have the ability to stuff the middle of the line. Who cares? They've already run past the play. Oh no, we might not be able to get a body on the second linebacker. You don't want a body on Devondre Campbell. You honestly want to keep him out in space, make him think about stuff because he's real slow. as you said, the game might be fast, but his body is slow. And the game is in slow motion for him, and so is his body, I believe was the exact line. So
that was about right.
Yeah, it's a much better line when I put it correctly. It's this is the issue. And the idea that, oh, well, Leonard Floyd will come back in the second half. Okay, let's ask the longtime veteran to play better football in the second half of the season. Perhaps. Unlikely. Or, you know, Robert Beal. Sam Aquanu, maybe. I'm not going to negate Sam Aquanu, but they've had to move Sam Aquanu on to the inside. So I guess they don't have to do that.
They put him
now.
At three-tech like he did at Maryland because they don't have a lot of options. And,
maybe that changes now that you have another Davis. Maybe having two Davi is better than just one, and now you don't have to move Aquanu to the inside. But, like, okay, Dre Greenlaw is going to come back eventually. It's not this week. It's not next week. And it's probably not the week after that. But around Thanksgiving, you might have a Dre Greenlaw back. What's that going to look like?
Off an Achilles. Like, yeah. It's just like, it feels like a trade deadline where they did the thing that we sort of... it's not even that I blame them. You know, I actually think it's a pretty reasonable... Yeah. Like, I think it's a pretty reasonable way to handle it. I just don't know about the defensive tackle they got. Maybe, who knows? Maybe they asked about Jeremiah Ledbetter and they were told by their former GM to take a hike.
Yeah, maybe Trent Baalke doesn't take phone calls from 408 area codes.
Who knows? But it was not an inspiring approach. It was very much like, well, do we really want to double down or do we have some good rookies and, you know, maybe let's have more good rookies next year because, you know, we can't get anything that's really going to fundamentally change us. It's like, would they get a fourth wide receiver, an extra defensive end? I don't know.
I have no qualms with sticking what you have at wide receiver. I think a lot of folks were in on defensive end. I thought that, you know, it'd probably been nice to get one of those too. Those don't come cheap. They obviously are a little bit snake bitten and a little bit skittish from last year's experiment with just bringing in defensive ends. Their thought is that Yetur Gross-Matos is going to come back and that can help there as well. And perhaps it can, at least it takes snaps away from Robert Beal, who let me know when he does something, folks. I'm really looking for it. The irony is, as I was saying earlier, this feels like something they would do to like assuage us and be like, oh, well, look at his RAS score. Like, wow, right. So athletic. And I guess what they didn't think is that we'd actually turn on the film and be like, which one is he again? I mean, I put on all of his stops in the last 2 years. And even then I'm like, who? Where? Oh, is he on the right guard? Oh, okay. He was supposed to be getting the run stop there. He's an unimpressive player in a scheme that is the exact same with a crazy amount of athleticism. You see it, but it doesn't translate. Robert Beal has a crazy amount of athleticism. Again, let me know when it translates. So
yeah, I just think it's a team that, like, again, I'm not blaming them. I think
got to get the body.
Listen, I laid out the case for a bunch of like fringe moves, right? I was like, maybe the Jets would trade Jamie and Sherwood, even though they might want to actually keep him and re-sign him. Yeah. Good player, familiar scheme. Hard to get a linebacker and feel good about him. Maybe you can get a better defensive tackle. They clearly tried and came up empty.
Yeah.
Defensive end, I was like, they're going to get Yetur Gross-Matos back, and that's sort of their bet. They invested in the offseason, and so they sort of have to stick with that bet. And then, you know, you could get a fourth wide receiver, but how much is it worth to go get a fourth wide receiver? So I kind of get their approach. It feels like, well, our entire hope for this season relies on the Achilles of Christian McCaffrey, and that has not fundamentally changed.
No.
So
that's fun. Know, it also there's also something to be noted in that they went and got somebody who runs the exact same scheme. Like, I do think, you know, you were asking me before the show, like, is Kaserik a fraud? And you were asking it tongue in cheek, but like, there is a level of like, this defensive line has had to get additions every year for the last couple of years. What does that say about how Kaserik, who gets a lot of autonomy to run the defense, what's that say about him? Now, there's injuries and things like that, but like, how he doesn't have somebody ready to go from the practice squad for this job is telling. I do think the injuries are probably the main driver of this. So I'm not going to put that on him, but it is interesting that, you know, talking to a couple of folks before the trade deadline, like, wide receiver was going to be a tough position for them to go and get anybody at.
Yeah.
Because Kyle doesn't want to teach someone how to be a wide receiver in his system mid-season. Linebacker, same thing, right? Like that's just, you have to understand everything that's happening on the field. Like, how are you going to get up to speed in a short period of time? You saw what the Seahawks and the Titans just had when they did a linebacker switch and both of those guys went out there. It might as well have been playing on their hands, walking around.
Well, Ernest Jones had a better game last game, but yeah, it's tough. It's a tough thing to adjust to immediately.
But defensive tackle from the same scheme, there's nothing to learn. There's nothing new. So Kocerek doesn't have to like bring anybody along. You just sic them. Yeah. So there's something to that when we're talking about a trade and the human element and the mental element of it all. But still, uninspiring. Not that we were expecting much, but I wanted a little more Farhan. I wanted a little more win on the margin. And this just felt perfunctory.
Felt like shit. Let's go get someone, whatever.
I mean, I guess we'll just call Houston and see who they want to give us.
Yeah.
Default team for a default player at a default spot.
It was something where you wanted to go, oh, who's that guy? Interesting. Like the Amenahu thing that was brought up. Amenahu was a guy that they picked and you're like, ooh,
there's something there.
And it worked out. This was like, all right, well, it's a guy who's not produced at all, but you know, he's athletic. So I guess Chris can do something with that.
I suppose. And perhaps he can. Maybe. It's just hard for me to believe that this is going to turn into anything that's going to impact the season other than 10 snaps a game. He can be a body in there and they don't have to play Evan Anderson or they don't have to play Kevin Givens, who maybe is more injured than they're letting on. It's just a body.
Bosa thought he was going to end up on IR last time. You know, he was like, oh, we made a move for Givens. And after the team said nothing about Givens and we didn't know he was hurt.
Niners just released Jalen Graham and Anders Carlson. So I guess Jake Moody is on the mend, or they're just done with Anders Carlson and they'll do it again in another couple of days. The Jalen Graham one, he was the last guy on the roster.
Yeah. Like,
so he's the first guy off.
They stole him off. What was it? Commander's practice squad and brought him back. Yeah. A guy where, you know, you can be like, wow, he's big. He's strong. He doesn't know how to play the position.
Yeah. I go on with Larry Kruger once a week on Thursday nights, and I'll actually do Niners Nightly with him tonight on KMBR at around 6:30. And he's a big Jalen Graham guy. And I just consistently ask why. And he talks about all these things. It's not to go in on Larry. Larry's a big fan of the players that we haven't seen yet. But like in Jalen Graham's case, like we have seen him. And this is the same thing with the Khalil Davis. Like, if this guy was a prospect, you and I would be drooling. We'd be all over him.
Because 100%.
Crazy athleticism. You can do something here. But then the problem is, and this is somewhat of the problem I have with Yetur Gross-Matos. They're like, oh, so projectable. And I'm like, then why hasn't he done anything at the NFL level? And you can make the argument, he was on Carolina and they suck. Okay, well, that's an argument. I have to hear that out. I have to acknowledge that that's a possibility. I don't have to grade him on a curve coming from the same. I'm repeating myself ad nauseum here. But like when you've, with Jalen Graham in this case, like I've seen him in training camp every year for 3 years, it seems. Yeah. He's never once flashed to me.
I disagree that he's not flashed. He's made some big plays. He also will get, you know, cleared out because he's coming in too hot.
Yeah. That seems to be an MO for the 49ers linebackers these days. So, let's lay out what we have going on here. It's Tuesday. Tomorrow we'll be at 49-49. And the presumption is that Christian McCaffrey is going to practice, that Christian McCaffrey will be in a ramp up period to possibly play on Sunday. Yeah. I'm with you 100%. This feels like the entire season rides on the frayed Achilles of Christian McCaffrey.
I mean, Kyle's tone the last time we talked to him is like, if he's got no setbacks then maybe. And if it all goes well, then he could potentially maybe play. We'll see. But it literally is, if he doesn't come back, this thing's cooked. And I think they're going, well, how much do we trust that to happen and double down? And like, none of these other moves matter unless McCaffrey's good. And if McCaffrey's good, some of these other moves wouldn't matter that much, right? Because then the offense is cooking, gets easier on the defense. And, you know, you just look a lot more like what you were on offense last year. So that's problem solved.
Well, you know? Yeah, last year they had the best offense in the NFL. And this year they're pretty average because they can't beat man-to-man. And again, we come back to right before they got Christian McCaffrey in 2022. The Debo experiment as the wide back had failed because, one, it was limited in his contract that he had just signed. And two, the league figured out, oh, we'll just play man-to-man against him and we'll take our losses with him catching passes out of the back. We'll take our losses because he doesn't have that kind of burst. But he can't play zone against Debo Samuel because he'll just weave right through it and he'll knock two dudes off and then he's in the end zone. And so why did Kyle go get Christian McCaffrey? Because it forced teams to have to play zone because you have to keep all eyes on Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
You have to keep your body in front of Christian McCaffrey. If you're playing man-to-man linebacker, Christian, you're dead. You're dead. And it's very evident, and I think it's been under-discussed, maybe not on this show, but certainly in your grander landscape. It's not as if they didn't think Christian McCaffrey was going to play in week one. They installed an entire offense, much like last year, built around Christian McCaffrey. Now, they didn't practice it with him, but they installed an offense built around Brandon Ayuk, Christian McCaffrey. Neither of them practiced. We saw the ramifications of that with Ayuk, but we're certainly seeing the ramifications of it without McCaffrey because everyone's just played man-to-man. Even Dallas was playing man-to-man. Yep. I guess we're going to just square you up, and it looked okay, save for a quarter. So McCaffrey comes back. At least there's the threat of, hey, you're going to have a linebacker on this dude. Any snap could be his last, but until that Achilles goes, don't play man-to-man. And in which case, things are going to open up in a big way. The second that Christian McCaffrey's not on the field, though, they're going to be jamming these motherfuckers again. And I don't think there was anything they could do at the trade deadline to change that. I don't think there was. It just is what it is. But it's pretty wild that the 49ers' success is so contingent on not just one player, but an injured player. And I think we should probably redo last year's MVP vote. That's just my thought.
100%. I'm with you. It's all on McCaffrey and a lot on Pearsall and mostly on Purdy and maybe a little bit on Dre Greenlaw. But if McCaffrey's not right, truly nothing matters. So that's where we're at.
If anything is riding on Dre Greenlaw, which I don't disagree that it is, that just tells you how desperate the situation is.
It's not good.
I guess it's also telling that it's Christian McCaffrey, but like Dre Greenlaw and Christian McCaffrey operate on different levels of godliness. Correct. So like you're willing to say, it hinges on Christian McCaffrey. He's arguably, when he's at his best, the best player in the NFL. Dre Greenlaw is a very good linebacker. Is he the best weak side linebacker in his own division? I mean, maybe not.
Yeah.
So,
well,
they get Tampa. They get Tampa. What did you see from Tampa? They got a short week, by the way. For all the talk we've had about rest deficiency with this 49ers team, which has been laughable, right? Kansas City and Dallas coming off of byes. I think that Green Bay comes off a bye as well. Buffalo might come off a bye. One of the two coming up here. The Niners get a massive rest switch here with Tampa at home. So you got to go cross country, 10 a.m. game, body clock. But at home, short week, and the Niners are coming off a bye week. But, Tampa gave Kansas City a pretty good run there.
Tampa's a tough team, regardless of who they have. They're just physical and tough. But, listen, they gave Kansas City a run for their money. Clock management wasn't great. Baker's been good. Mm-hmm. I still would gut feeling go with the Niners in that game. But I gotta watch more of it. Obviously, didn't see the all 22. So
your thoughts on Gibson coming back? We joked about it, but, does it? Can't hurt to have a safety that you
can't
trust.
It can't hurt. I was joking about it just because it's like, this is going to solve it, which obviously is not
if
the case.
If only we had Tayshaun Gibson.
But
4-4 on the year.
It can't hurt. He knows the system. If nothing else can help coach up Mustafa,
And
doesn't hurt.
That's going to be something we're going to handle.
They don't trust Odom, so.
Nor should they. On special teams or on defense. But it'll be interesting to see what they say. I will say the best development the Niners have done, the biggest change that they've made, moving Thursday availabilities up, Jake.
Dude, if that sticks, life-changing.
Big time win.
If that's at like one or noon for the rest of the season, and then we just don't get destroyed, maybe it's only for away games when they want to move up the schedule. But maybe. Good Lord, if we can get Brock Purdy at 1 p.m. instead of 4 o'clock, that would change my life. And I
can't go on Thursdays. I got to pick up my kid. And so it's just like there's 0% chance that I can be at availability on a Thursday and get back to Alameda before daycare closes. And so it's like, let's just do this before practice, guys. Like, it can't be that hard. So they really are just feeding into our egos, but they didn't see that we would have the film. They didn't know that we'd have that film. And that's sweet NFL pro. Okay, we'll call it there. We will talk on Friday. On Friday, we'll do our mega super breakdown. Basically, how much man-to-man can Tampa play versus the 49ers? And here are some clips of it. That's what it's turned into every week. But ultimately, that's been the season. And we'll talk to you all then. Looking forward to it immensely.
Appreciate you, folks.
All righty.